Welcome to Scenes, conversations in culture with the people who know it best. I'm your host Lenny, and along with my brilliant producer Ruby, we'll be chatting with guests across music, art, fashion, film, sport and technology in a bid to understand the scenes we love that little bit better. Today we are joined by a London-based creative specialising in lifestyle and sports photography and motion. He has worked with a seemingly never-ending list of the world's finest sports people, from Olympic gold medalists to world record breakers, World Cup holders, Super Bowl winners and major champions. I would try and name them all, but we'd be here all bloody day. On top of that, he creates award-winning short films about individuals and subcultures pushing themselves beyond the limit in the pursuit of, well, that's partly what we're here to find out today. It is my absolute pleasure to welcome Duncan Nichols. How are you, mate?
Fantastic, Lenny. Ruby, Lenny, it's a real privilege and a pleasure to be here. I'm really looking forward to today's chat.
Amazing. And so we're in our brand new studio.
Yeah, it's great.
2023. We got camera one, camera two, we should say, camera three.
Why not?
So the audience gets to not only hear our dulcet tones this season, but also see our beautiful faces.
Yeah, no, I've got a makeup for this.
Yeah, it's a wicked little setup. I like it.
So what was the first thing you fell in love with and the impact it has had on you later in life?
I think on like a micro sort of specific level, I'd say even as a child, one of my sort of favourite things, and even now, was like going through, like, so coming in specifically into photography, it was just going through like photographs that have been taken, family shots, like older ones, you know, physically picking up a camera and taking sort of like shots myself. But also reading, writing. I could just sit there for hours and just like read a book, copy stuff out, make my own stories up. Like, I would just sit there for eternity and do that, and all these sort of things. So they're all, I think, different creative elements there, the visual side of things. But even now, like writing and sort of like thinking. But I think on reflection, what that really is, as a sort of a child, and there was a curiosity. It's almost like a flow state. And I think the way that sort of translated itself now is like the career that I've chosen, like the actually creating on set, whether it's film or photography, like you, that's exactly what's happening. And that's almost like, even maybe without knowing it, there are obviously like things that I loved as a child that I've wanted to bring into my career, like the actual photography. But I think a bigger thing that was probably there that I wasn't really aware of is I was kind of wanting that experience and the high of creating new work and being on set and doing something, like, it's completely on another level. And now, like, I kind of chase that when I'm, you know, when I'm not working on shooting on set, like the things that I love to the most is, like, you know, is write stuff down, is journal, is read. I'm constantly reading things. So it's things that I love as a child, but they are, I'm almost like, I'm singularly focused on that thing. And I get that being on set in a shoot, like, there's nothing like that high, really. I mean, you know, family and all that, like, great friends, and that's another thing on another level. Yeah. But I'm talking in terms of like what I could do outside of those things. But I was, without knowing it, that's what you're kind of doing as a child. I could sit there for 6 or 7 hours, just like doing that one thing, and time's just gone like that, really. Like, it was the end of the day, and I have that now with work. Yeah.
Yeah, I love talking about the flow state. Is something that interests me massively. Is there anything specific or any kind of tools you use to help get into that, or are, when you're passionate about something and fixated on it, do you just naturally fall into it, firstly, and then secondly, how would you describe that feeling to others? Because I personally get it when I'm running, but not all the time. You know, I will fall into it without realizing. And I'm just really always really interested to see how other people get themselves into that state, and then also what it feels like to them.
Yeah, great. It's a great question. I'm very aware of the immense benefits and enjoyment of that flow state. I think I use exercise and yoga and meditation to get in that, and I kind of structure as much as I can structure my life in a way that most days, if not every day of the week, I'll get up a lot earlier than, like, you know, my wife, and before my son wakes up, and you use that time to, you know, to meditate, to journal, to move, or, you know, like this morning, got out of the house and just went to the gym first thing in the morning. I like that solitude of not, you know, not having too many sort of, you know, inputs and distractions. So I will sort of structure things and it feeds back into my work and every aspect of my life. And, you know, in such a positive way, I'm very, very conscious of it and try to structure things as much as I can to have that as sort of the lead kind of thing, the lead domino before everything else. And naturally get that with shoots and with work. And I think that's another reason why I just love it so much. And it's such a rush because you're singularly focused on like completely in that zone. Sometimes not even like in a way, not kind of thinking about it. You're just in that flow. And I think there's so many different ways you can get it. But I think that's just where all the sort of magic is.
I'd now love a brief history of Duncan Nichols, if you don't mind, because you started out in the finance banking industry and have obviously now moved in photography. So I'd love to hear about that journey and that arc.
Yeah. So where I am sort of now, I'm like into like 16 years of being a photographer. And as you mentioned, sort of specializing really in commercial sports and lifestyle and advertising campaigns. For the last 4 to 5 years, that's been sort of the motion side of things. So directing and increasingly sort of camera operating and cinematography side of things as well. So like an extension of, a lot of my sort of creative voice and creative style in that respect. And then, yeah, it was a non-linear path into photography potentially. Economics degree, followed that sort of, went into sort of, into finance, and I was working UBS and the Royal Bank of Scotland. So like straight from sort of uni onto the grad scheme at UBS. So worked in London and in the States as well. Had a tremendous time in that industry as well. Worked with some brilliant, brilliant teammates and managers. The training, I think, which has always been a big thing for me, and learning new things was outstanding. As the years went on, I'd sort of, you know, friends were in different industries, you'd kind of meet up with them and have a beer or something, and you talk about work and it'd be great, and they would talk about their work and their eyes would light up and their speech would be faster and they'd be really into it. And I was just like clocking on this kind of, I don't quite have that. I had it maybe at the start of my banking time in the industry. It was really exciting, it was new, but maybe wasn't kind of getting it in the last sort of couple of years. And I suppose like running parallel alongside that was just an increasing love of sort of film and photography and a visual. And I was taking like evening classes for photography each week. And instead of like taking 2 weeks off work, I'd do a 2-3 week photography course. So I was doing that over a couple of years and go, oh, I really love this. But I also spent maybe 2 years going, is there something else out there that I could be doing at this point? Not quite knowing what it was. And then in the last team that I was sort of at in banking, when I switched teams into that area, one of the women on the team, she just came back from the team and she'd studied photography for like 8 months or like a uni year at one of the unis in London.
Very nice.
And she was telling me about the course and she was like, you should go for it. So I was like, I didn't really want to do another 3 years of studying something. Mm-hmm. I felt that I could probably switch into something faster than that. And it was a course at the University of the Arts in London, which was very sort of industry aligned, so very practical. And I pulled together a portfolio that sort of summer. Came back actually from my best friend's stag do, like 2 days early to do this sort of like to go for the interview and stuff like that. And just went for it and got accepted. And then I was like, oh, do you know what? Like at that point, I had 6 years experience in finance with lots of friends there and lots of good connections. And I always back myself, to be honest. I didn't really feel like it was a risk, but I was like, do you know what? The worst thing that could happen here is that I study something that I absolutely love for 8 months. Let's just go for the ride on this. And then I was studying that, enjoying it more and more, like going, oh, wow, I really, really like this. And a friend of mine from university, her partner was a photographer, so I'd go along to a lot of his shoots and started assisting him as well. So I was kind of getting the practical experience as I was going. And it got to the end of the course and I was like, oh, there's no way I'm not giving this a shot. And it sort of started there. So first shoot was like July 2007. And I love it more and more now than I ever did, really.
What was it that drew you to sports?
There was some elements at the start as well. it's always really been that sort of people photography, like portraits, lifestyle, sort of sports. Mm-hmm. And when I was sort of transitioning into the industry, a lot of people, like the creatives or working ad agencies, would all sort of say, like, specialize, and that's definitely the right case. And there's massive value in specializing in something that you really, really love. I think it sort of, you can see it in the work. It does knock everything up another level. It gives you that extra kind of spur when you're like, maybe having a few sort of like challenges with things. And I've always just really, really been inspired by it, or just really enjoyed. Like, as a kid, I loved playing a million different sports. I was always really, I think, on a psychological and a sort of mental level, really like pulled in by it, like elite performance. I didn't really kind of, and you get that obviously in every context, in every industry as well. But I think there was something that kind of almost like transcended. I think sport does, and it's kind of, stars and the people in it, like, they transcend that. For me, they transcend that sport. They're not just, you know, you can be really inspired by a Serena Williams or whoever that sort of is in your context, but I hate tennis. It's like there were, and I was also always really curious, and I didn't really realize this, I think, until I got into later in life, but I'm just like, what does it take to become the best in the world at something? Like, that was a real, like, mad curiosity. And I think sport gives you a something you can measure that in. So that was maybe, like, I've always been really, like, driven by that. And I think my upbringing and the sort of the I suppose really influential people in my upbringing, like my grandparents, my dad, all working class background, it was just like relentless work ethic. And I think you kind of see that in sport. So that for me was always very, very kind of attractive and inspiring. And I was like, oh wow, like, there's something that you kind of, like, if you dedicate yourself this way, or, like, you know, I've always just been inspired by people that kind of will sacrifice everything and be very sort of singularly focused around something. So there was that element as well. And I think just visually, like the dynamism of sport, or like a really engaging portrait or something like that. And I think with the sports world, like, I've shot so many different sports people and different sports, but, you know, there's still a million sports that I haven't yet, so there's still, like, I can still progress. And each sport in the context of photographing and film, it will have its own kind of nuances as well. So, and this, I'm going all over the place here, but it's also like with photography, I think, like, why I love it so much now is there's not a point in my career that I won't stop learning something, especially now that you've moved into film. And you can always expand, and you can always do something different, or, you know, every element, and even like the business side of things, or how you interact, or like all the different opportunities now that weren't there when I started out, or the different ways you can develop your brand and your style and your personality. You can constantly, that's never ever gonna, like never ever gonna stop. I won't ever reach a point where I'm like, I know everything. It's impossible. And I think that's really, really inspiring. That's probably why I loved, like, the first few years going back to being in banking, because it was just relentless, like, exams and training and training and training. And I was like, oh, I love this. And, you know, everyone that was surrounding me and my managers were, like, really, really intelligent and really inspiring and good people. And I suppose that's why I was kind of also drawn into the sports side of things there, but also maybe on another level why I was drawn into being a creative and running my own business, because I knew I have massive, not deficiencies, but things that I weren't as good at that I had to be good at, otherwise I wouldn't succeed financially as well. So I think it's like a career choice that always gives me the opportunity to constantly grow, and there's no hiding place as well.
And just going back to what you were saying about elite sports people, because there's something, there's professional sports people, and then there's that, you know, 0.001% of elite world-class performers.
Once in a life, yeah.
Is there something noticeable in the difference between those two types of sports people? Obviously, you're born with some kind of natural ability in certain areas, but, you know, we talk about the Ronaldos of this world, the Tiger Woods of this world, the Michael Jordans. With the people that you've worked with, have you found a common thread that separates those from, you know, the rest of, you know, the professional sports people they compete against?
Yeah. I think it comes back to, like, there's a few things. There's a focus, and I think belief. I think they might not all have this, and some of them might have, like, probably all got massive niggling doubts as well, but I think a belief, and also I suppose another word that springs to mind, I think, is repetition. and they were just like, I've been around like the Wales rugby team and they're sort of training and quite an intense environment and lots of others, and I think they will all just go to another level where like 99.999% of people just won't push themselves that far. There will be, you know, definitely be like Usain Bolts and Michael Phelps, people that have like physical characteristics that gave them that advantage. However, I'm sure that in every sport there's a million examples of probably at a certain ages more talented people that didn't break through. And I think it's a combination of obviously some incredible natural talent, but probably a mindset of just never quitting and just like relentlessly going for it. And so, you know, and maybe lots of luck along the way and surrounded by great people. But there's also kind of I think I'll come back to the Wales rugby team. That was an incredible thing. So 2018 and 2019, I did a bunch of shoots with Under Armour, and we were the first like external crew I think that the Wales rugby team had ever sort of allowed in, and we were literally like in the gym training with them
you were on the weights.
Absolutely. Wow. I mean, I've never seen anything like it, but they were, you know, out on the pitch training, and we were in there and we were doing a lot of that sort of stuff, and it went so well that they invited us back and we went over to Switzerland to their like pre-World Cup training camp. So you were like in there and they were just incredible. Like, they were invited down to have like breakfast with the team and all this kind of stuff. They were an incredible bunch of people, but you could see the differences even within the team. So you had Alan Wynne-Jones, the captain. Like, if you want to talk about aura, like, he just comes in and everyone around him is world class, and there's just like this, it's, some people just operate on another level, and there was that leadership with him that was amazing, and there was also like you could see like the humor and the humility side of things, and the way he was sort of like bonding teams, and also like they were just not taking any, you know, like, you know, there were, like, any sort of like prisoners of certain things. And there was one point we were in the gym, and one of the camera operators I was with, like, Alan Jones was there, and he just turned straight round and clipped, like, just slightly clipped the camera, and he like gave me the sort of death stare, which he was like, you know, it was fine, because he was in this zone of training, and I was like, I don't know if I can swear on this, but I was like, holy
really? Yeah, you absolutely can.
I was like, I didn't, in my life, I didn't ever want to be on the receiving end of sort of that. But he was like, you know, fine, and joking around afterwards, but you could tell like there was, I suppose there's just like an intensity around these people. I think they are. As you know, there'll be lots of differences there as well. I mean, a few others. I say belief, but I could also say relief. So I had an amazing shoot with Dina Asher Smith a few years ago, and again, I had had a little bit more time on set, and we were moving from one location on this athletics track to another. So I was like walking and sort of talking with her, and I just said like, what's it like to like, you know, to be a world champion, to, you know, to cross the line in an Olympic final, like all these things. I was like, what's that high like? Expecting like her to say like, you know, it's the most euphoric and amazing experience. And she's like, well, the overriding thing was relief, because I think it's the pressure she'd put on herself and like the pressure not to, you know. So I think you can potentially think certain things, but I think each athlete will be very, very different, and others will approach it with different, you know, like I think there are various sort of ways to get to the top, and some will be, you know, quieter individuals and more focused. But I think there's probably a willingness to, as an overarching thing, I should imagine a willingness to go to a place mentally and physically and sort of sacrifice level that a lot of people won't do. And then obviously matching that with the talent and the right coaching and the right support staff and everything to sort of support them along the journey.
So we've touched on some of the common threads that link these elite sports people, but are there any misconceptions that you've come across?
An incredible autobiography that I read actually called Open, which is if you're into, well, I think it's amazing. So it's Andre Agassi's autobiography, and I think one misconception is potentially that every sportsman, like sportswoman, loves their sport and it's always been their thing. And he constantly talks about the book, how much he hates tennis. And he's like, and all the sort of interviewers are like, you know, they're like, no, stop joking. He's like, no, I hate it. And so that was an interesting one. Not that I'd picked up on actually, you know, having a conversation with a sports person, but just being a sports fan myself and reading about it and going, oh, actually, like, someone can be like one of the all-time greats and absolutely despised. Potentially, I mean, I don't know how, you know, to what degree. I mean, I'm sure he loved many elements of it, but I think, you know, he really has sort of hated this kind of, you pick up on the book. I don't know if there is, but maybe there's a misconception or myth that they all have like this sort of unshakable belief and arrogance sort of in yourself. I have definitely like met those that potentially are, you know, there's a humility, but also like potentially they're constantly overcoming doubts themselves to sort of to be at that level as well. So yeah, I think it, yeah, as I said, I think it's just like there's so all the differences you have in any cohort of people or industry, I think, are just all existing there, and there'll be those that are like, you know, are have to take on that persona of, you know, unbelievable self-confidence and arrogance, and then and others that maybe are almost like succeeding despite that voice in their head all the time. Maybe everyone, especially at that real elite of the elite level, they've all gone through dips in their career or criticism without a shadow of a doubt.
Gosh, yeah.
On another level, but still gone, no, like keep going. I think, yeah, probably the higher up they've gone, they're probably even more so, and even more spotlight, and even more criticism. And
you open yourself up for it when you get on a platform that big. I remember, I think it was 2 Olympics ago, there was a US gymnast, I think her name is Gabby Douglas, and she was in the top 5 squad. That was the year that the 5 of them were like the dream squad. Like, it was like the best team the US had. In hindsight, she must have been around like 20. And she was also she was a dark-skinned black woman, and she just, like, the vitriol she faced from the media because she didn't smile enough on camera, because she was so, I guess, in the flow state, just so focused, and I guess wasn't smiling and waving at the camera all the time. And like the media just blasted her for it, even though she was doing really well. And there was a whole controversy that she didn't, when you do the like national anthem, you're supposed to have your hand over your heart. And apparently she didn't do that, which again is like a statement in itself, and totally like that's why you're allowed to do what you want. And the, like, she almost dropped out of gymnastics just because of how horrific the backlash was. And it's so crazy to think that you can be literally one of the top 5 athletes in your country for such a physically taxing sport and still be opened up to that sort of public criticism. And I know it happens across so many sports. I know it happens in football a lot in the UK, and it's just, yeah, it's just really interesting. Quite tough to watch sometimes.
Yeah. It's very, very hard. You really feel for everyone that's sort of on the end of that. Yeah.
I'd love to jump over to Good Planets.
Yes.
Now. Could you just tell us a little bit about it? And then also I want to touch on the Speed Project and Wally. Am I saying that correctly? Is it Wally?
Yeah, Wally.
Wally,
yeah.
It is. Yeah, okay,
yeah,
it's Wally.
Oh,
Wally.
Yeah.
I'd love to talk about those two films specifically.
Yeah. Good Planets is myself and filmmaker Tobias James. We met, became friends about 6 years ago now. We're both working out of a co-working space at the time, and obviously in the same sort of like fields, and just went out for a coffee, just really connected on a creative level, on a friendship level, and then we went off and sort of we shot something together. It was our first sort of like personal project together, which was around the track mafia. So it was they're a running squad that I'd shot for Nike, and we did a short film around them, and we just really, really clicked. And I think we clicked on a creative level, and also like what we wanted to achieve in our career and the impact we wanted to have. And it's like the classic case of like 1 + 1 = 3. That's maybe why I had to leave banking. My maths is that poor. But I think we raise each other's game creatively. There's enough of sort of differences there and different strengths that we bring to the other person as well, and then very much for, in terms of the output that we can create for clients. And this was a sort of time that I'd done a few bits of sort of a video and film, but it was coming from a photography background, and Toby's coming from a purely sort of filmmaking background. And we just really, really, really clicked. And then Under Armour happened, and there was, I think, an Adidas job as well. And we just love working together. And and we've just done tons of stuff sort of since. And Good Planets, really, we were talking about it a lot, but Good Planets kind of happened right at the beginning of the pandemic. So we were sort of sitting back, and I think it was driven by a lot of things. I think it was us in terms of expanding ourselves and our skills and our ability. I think everything in this industry, many industries, is about collaboration and teamwork. And I think I saw that even more so in the sort of the film world and the more, you know, bigger crews, etc. And I think it's just so much more you can do when there's two minds. And, you know, I was away last week. He was moving a lot of projects forward and editing other stuff. And then, you know, we can, the output can be so much more. And we really, really click. And we also saw from, I think, from a client perspective that, you know, increasingly shoots where integrated campaigns might want both. I mean, you know, we can, but if it's just pure motion and video, we do that, motion and stills, and we've got a very sort of similar kind of aesthetic. And I think we wanted to have an amazing impact with our careers in terms of what we shot and also like how we sort of shot it as well. So, you know, in the sports and wellness world, a lot of, you know, This Girl Can and campaigns that inspire movement and positive, yeah, just like, you know, better health and better mental health as well. We're 1% for the planet members, which we can come on to in a minute in terms of, and we just wanted to do, and we've done a lot of campaigns recently. They're outside of the sports world, but they're essentially like, we just sat back and be like, okay, as you move up in your career and you have more and more, you know, you've done more, it's about like, how do you sort of leverage that experience and ability to do better and better work? And you, for us, it was about, okay, you know, what do we want to sort of, yes, it's great to shoot for all these amazing brands and sports stars and everything else, which we still love, but it's also about what impact can we have? What companies are doing amazing things in the world, you know, environmentally, socially, and, you know, within the wellness world as well, and what stories can we amplify for them? And we just felt that it would be a better offering for clients and a stronger offering. And we've got like both got amazing networks, so you can pull those two networks together as well. So there might be, you know, briefs that come in that nothing to do with this, but we can pass those people on. But it's just about having that kind of collaboration and someone that, you know, you really, really kind of click with, and you can bounce ideas off and, like, you know, question each other to the right sort of like level as well. Yeah, we laid a lot of the foundations for that sort of at that time. But yeah, it was just it's a great friendship. It's a great creative sort of partnership there as well. And I just got off the phone with him on the way in. There's like three other things coming in and blah blah blah. And it's like, it happens all the time. So we can kind of and I've learned tons from him, and I think he has vice versa. So I think we both had that sort of hunger for new skills and knowledge. So it's been an amazing sort of, you know, expansion and sort of next kind of stage as well.
Yeah, and we were talking earlier about, you know, the flow state and changing your perspective, and I think collaboration is one of the best ways to do that, right? As soon as you see something through someone else's eyes, you know, it can completely shift the way you approach it. And it sounds like you both have that impact on one another.
Definitely. And I think one almost like tension that I've been aware of throughout sort of being a sort of freelance photographer, and obviously on every shoot, you know, you have like you know, you've got all the client side and the producers and assistants and digi ops and retouchers and agents and everything else, but everything you're producing is such a team game. And I always felt there was there were some ceilings there that you could knock out of the way if you're like, there's more of you. And it's all about, you know, great relationships in this industry as well. It's like, it's a benchmark of being able to create guaranteed great work, so the pressure's off there, you know, in terms of like, or from anyone kind of commissioning you. But it's about like what you can do as a collective, what you can do and building those relationships. So it just felt like the right thing to do, in, you know, from our own individual growth perspectives, but also from like, okay, well, that's what, you know, clients are going to increasingly sort of want, and just having a solution there that can scale up and down with a lot of briefs that come in as well. It's been brilliant, and amazing. It continues to be brilliant. Yeah.
So, God, my stomach's rumbling. Can you hear it? Mine's rumbling. I'm like, is it picking up? It's fine if it is.
It's fine.
So, up until now, we've focused on elite sports people.
Yeah.
And then the two Good Planets projects I just mentioned, so the Speed project and Wally, they're both about humans pushing themselves beyond the limit.
Yeah.
But they're not elite sports people in the sense that they have global acclaim, earn lots of money.
Yeah.
There's obviously a different reason that they're taking on these things. So firstly, can you just give us a quick synopsis of what each one is about, and then we can maybe delve into why these people are looking to push themselves beyond what we perceive as humanly possible.
Starting off with Wally, that was a short film that we created in 2019. Wally is, I think there's the actual common threads here with everything that we've sort of spoken about as well. So again, being just, Wally's one of the most like no limits people I've ever sort of met in my life. He basically, I met him on a New Balance shoot earlier that year in 2019, and he's a blind marathon runner. He's from Afghanistan. He was a translator with the British Army in Afghanistan, lost his sight in an IED explosion over there. Father of three kids. And prior to that shoot, over my whole career, I've done a lot of shot a lot of campaigns with various sort of visually impaired and blind charities. It's something I've always been like drawn towards anyway. So I really, really connected with Wally, and just he's just the willpower of the man. Like it's just it's so inspiring. So when I met him, I was like, let's keep in contact because I really want to sort of delve more into your story. And then he was running the London Marathon that year, so we was with Toby and another brilliant DOP, Chris Dodds, we filmed some stuff there. We filmed it over quite a few days and really anchored the story in him as a father and as a human being and everything he wanted to achieve now. And we really wanted to help him because I suppose it comes back to other things we've said before. Like we really, myself and Toby and everything, are driven by like how can we serve our clients, other people. And with Wally, like he wants to achieve like, you know, insane things within the sporting context. And he's using sport as the vehicle to help support his family moving forward and to help, you know, move his career forward. So he'll be, speaking about his experiences, you know, qualifying for the Invictus Games, running marathons around the world, all these things. But he's using sport as the rehabilitation. He was a great athlete when he was a teenager, a boxer and a runner, and it's always been his passion. So that's an amazing like thread. Like it was sport that really, I mean, he credits it for sort of, saving his life and his sort of sanity now, but he's used that. But even the concept of being able to run a marathon when you're blind is mind blowing in the first place. And I was just, really touched by his spirit. And so we were like, okay, we really wanted to create a short film for him that he could then use for others to see and understand more about his story and just do something. And we were just all blown away by him as a person. So we shot that in 2019. That was incredible. And that was, one of our most favourite, I think one of my most favourite projects I've done.
Yeah, I mean, I was blown away by it when I watched it. And I think one of the key drivers for me that came out of it was his passion for inspiring others.
Yeah, that's exactly his story. And I think, you know, you meet someone and you're around their aura and their energy and you're just like, you just walk away just thinking, okay, I've set the limits for myself way, way too low here. Like his whole driver is he doesn't want any, blind or disabled kids coming through feeling that they can't do anything. He wants them all to have a completely limitless approach to life and not be stopped by anything like this. So he turned, you know, this horrific experience in his life, which is traumatic for him and his family, and he's a very spiritual and very religious man, and he was like, well, how do I, okay, you know, like there's two ways that we could go with this. Like he could go down, or he could, okay, that's my story, how do I use my story to help other people and inspire them to think differently. Like you come away from a day with filming with him and you're just like you know, you just, wow, like you're just really, really like, you pull in his energy and his willpower. And his willpower is, it's just insane. And he's also so competitive as well. Like I think it was one of his guide runners he just got rid of because they weren't fast enough for him, kind of thing. So he'll like, you know, he's like, no, I can run faster than this. And he got, when we filmed him on the London Marathon day, he got to the end and he was like, he was annoyed. He was like, well, I could run another one now. He just, it was almost like he hadn't sweat or anything. I think it was a really busy race. He had to start a little bit further back, but he was like, yeah, that was okay. But like, I could have run way faster than that. And he was so annoyed with himself. So he also had that, had a real, real like competitive drive, but he's great. We still keep in contact. He's always coming up with just amazing ideas from like run to like, you know, from London to Kabul, whatever he wants to do. He's just like, okay, he wants to do things that haven't been done before as well, again, to keep setting these examples. But it was just a really, also really, he's a really beautiful soul.
Yeah.
He's a really, really amazing man. And it's just another amazing part of my sort of job to get to, you know, I'm of course inspired by all these elite level sports people, but it's just the variety of people that I've met along the journey. And I think common traits to them, and you just come away and you go, okay, cool. Let me rethink a few things myself. And maybe like, where are my own sort of self-imposed limiting beliefs? And or how can I recontextualize something that I thought was difficult and actually use that? And that's a big thing, I think, going forward for me as well. Is like, you know, the tougher bits that I've had at various points in my life, actually, the power in that really is then being able to help someone else that goes through something that's got some, you know, parallels. And he's a wonderful example of that. The screening was, and it's, you know, it was just incredible. And, you know, his kids came along to the screening. We had a screening at the Genesis Cinema in Myland, which was a wonderful sort of evening and celebration sort of, you know, for him. Very special man.
He seems like it. And then moving on to the Speed Project.
So like the Speed Project, it's an unsanctioned relay race. The year that I shot it, there were like 65 teams from all over the world. And it starts at 4 a.m. At the pier in Santa Monica. And it's basically, there are almost like no rules. There's an original route, but basically, and it finishes at the under the sign-in in Vegas. Mm. So it's like 340 miles plus. So again, I think I was a friend of mine who I'd shot for Adidas years and years before. I had breakfast with him in maybe like 2018. I'd heard a little bit about this sort of race anyway, and then he just told me his story, and I was like, oh my word. And he was like, you've got Duncan, you will love this beyond anything else. It's everything that I really it's that pushing beyond any kind of limits you thought you sort of had an element to it. It's super visual, like, you know, LA through Death Valley and everything else. So like the visual, the landscapes, the portraits, the fast moving action stuff, like it's everything I love to shoot, and it's like this kind of context. So that was a really, really special project. There are quite a few like sort of, I suppose, wider stories that came from it for me as well. So it was a really, really emotional one for me. It was something that I tried for quite a long time to sort of connect with the people that started the race and build that relationship and get over there and sort of shoot it. That in itself took quite a long time. And then, there's so many lessons from this. So I'm a very visual person, so I have like, you know, boards of things that I want to achieve in my life or different bits. And I had this like black and white photo of there's a male athlete at the start line on his own at the pier in Santa Monica, and it's like the mist and stuff. So I'd almost like visualize myself there and shooting the race a hell of a lot. Started the sort of the friendship and the relationship with Nils, who's one of the guys that organized it. I was all set to go 2020, like literally one foot on the plane, pandemic happens, okay, bide your time. And there's a big creative lesson there. Like a lot of the things in life, you just got to like, you know, it can take years and it can take 2 months, 2 years, 5 years to get to that point. But it's just having the belief that it's going to happen. So to then actually sort of shoot it. And I think it turned out even better because in 2020, I was going out only on my own. But then now like Toby was coming as well, so we could shoot the stills and the motion, and then to share the experience with a great friend and fellow creative, and was off the charts. It almost in a way like closed off, like, even like the pandemic and stuff for me. I think being on that, the mist was there, like it was, couldn't have been any more cinematic if you tried. Like it's like 4 a.m. you've got the neon lights in there, and then it all kind of goes. And it was just like the first time I'd been together really at that point with so many like people. There's an amazing energy and a togetherness amongst it. We were filming predominantly with two US based all female teams who are just like, yeah, off the charts impressive people, and just amazing characters within it. And we just got to like ride the lightning really for sort of for kind of 48 hours really of the race. And it's a very, very different creative test as well. Like, you're used to, like, you know, long days, etc., but you almost like have to pace yourself at various points. Yeah, and we're delighted to have the short film out now as well. But it was a real, real high. Going back actually in 25 or whatever days time, going back to it again in end of March.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, which can't wait.
So the same team's racing?
Different team this time. We're doing something in the following year with the other teams actually, but in 2024, but different experience coming up. But yeah, it was a real, real high. It's a real kind of soul level experience. Because, you know, people are really pushing themselves beyond anything they sort of probably think. You know, there's the sleep deprivation, there's the heat to deal with. You know, I think it's the most dangerous endurance race in the world or something like that. I mean, it is like, there are points in there where the support teams and the RVs and stuff can't follow, potentially, if you choose a certain route, can't follow the athletes. So they're out there, no cell phone, you know, Mojave Desert at night. It's not, you know, it's called Death Valley for a reason. You know? So there are some real physical challenges. And I think as a creative as well, you know, you're going on the adrenaline, but you know, if you're starting at 4 a.m. and maybe not finishing for 40 hours, you've got to like pace yourself and work things out. But it was, it was a really, really special experience, and yeah, really buzzing to go back in a few weeks' time.
And what drives those people to do it? What did you get a feeling from them?
I think it is, it's a team event as well. Yeah. So I think a lot, maybe potentially there's that element as well, that they might not always get. If you're running, you know, 50 milers or 100 milers just on your own, there's that sort of element in the camaraderie. And I think just the opportunity to, I think a lot of these people are really driven to test themselves and find out where their own limits are and go through that. And it's there's two sort of things with the race. It's like no rules and no spectators. And what it really means by the no spectators is that everyone's looking out for other teams and aware there, because it is, there is a real danger there on many levels. So I think you feel that togetherness and that energy. It's really special. I mean, you spend a few days and everyone's going by and waving with each other and saying hello, and you kind of get to the end of it and you're like, oh, that's not life anymore. Like, you can't just, like, you know, walk around LA saying hi to everybody, and you're like, oh, it's rubbish. Maybe it should all be a bit more like that. So it's a really, really human soul level experience. And and as Cass, sort of, who's one of the lead sort of characters in our film, she sort of says, you're like, from the, you know, compare the moment when you're on the start line to when you finish the race, you're a radically different person. And it's the same as a creative as well. Like, we felt that we were coming back and, okay, I've got to internalize quite a lot of things here that I've kind of learned as well. And you make some fantastic new friendships from it as well.
Mm. Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah, that's one thing that really comes across, actually. It's which is just, it's quite an interesting concept, really. It's that, you know, fierce competition married with fierce support, and both of those things working in tandem.
Absolutely. And I think what probably links a lot of this, and I think a lot of the drive behind everything that I've sort of decided to either make as a personal project or a career choice, it is like almost like this mentality of like, I have no limits, or like, you know, it's an elite level sort of thinking that has always been a huge like magnet for me and a draw. And I think it's probably a commonality between those two projects and other things that we've got in the pipeline and we'll make ahead. So I'm just really, really like magnetized by people from many walks of life to just think like that. They'll just think on another level. I always find that very, very inspiring. And I think that's probably, if I think about it on a deeper level, what's really driven a lot of my life choices.
There's been lots of interesting words that we've thrown around today about elite level sports and, you know, human endeavor and people pushing themselves, you know, beyond the limit. If you could pick three words to describe the scene or the subculture of elite sport, what would they be?
Repetition.
Interesting.
Repetition. I think that is something that they'll all sort of have in common. They will just con- keep doing the same thing over and over and over and over to a level that probably most people don't realize they're doing. And I think you can apply that to anything in life, whether you're learning a new language or learning a new skill or something. It's just, it's over and over and over and over again, or reading a book, you don't remember it, or read it again, read it again, read it again. I think that's a big takeaway for me, is like the level of repetition and how powerful a skill that is in anything you do, and how sharp that makes you. I think focus is another one. That's probably there on another level. Yeah, and we've said it a few times, but belief. I think really that's the thing that I can probably attribute to some of my basic big successes, and other bits where I'm like, okay, yeah, I should have had a bit more belief kind of in myself there. I think that's a huge, huge thing. And whether the others help to sort of strengthen that belief, maybe the repetition does, maybe the focus does. But I think, yeah, maybe those three. Maybe if I had a fourth, maybe there's an element of visualization that's a really, really big thing there as well. I don't think it's potentially not in everything, because there was one coach that I asked about that, and he did say that wasn't really as big a driver for them. But a lot of others, I'd say, they've kind of been there so many times. And I think that visualization, where it's come into other contexts and business and other bits and pieces, probably has some pretty strong roots in the sporting context. I'm probably totally wrong here, but it might have been some of the sort of the German or the Russian teams in the sort of 1780s were quite, there were some of the more the earlier stories of that becoming in sort of the press, of how they'd use that to then go on and have sort of another level of success. I think that's a really, really, I mean, it's a big thing for me as well. Like, there's so many things that I've really, I think the more I can have clarity and focus around that and do that kind of hard thinking and that sort of like coming into your flow states and visualizing yourself in that, there's been so many points in my career where I've like, okay, I've been here before, you know, and it's, I can probably attribute that to quite a lot of, like, backed up by the hard work and everything else you need to do. It's not like I'm just going to sit here and visualize something and then just go and like
hang on the beach. And go and have a crack. Yeah.
No, exactly. Yeah, it's not going to work. But I think that's a big thing that I've taken from it myself as well. I've read a bunch of books, so I'm not like qualified in any way to speak about it. So I think there's a lot of science that backs up that now, in terms of like how you're then a lot more sort of acutely aware of opportunities that are aligned with that sort of new visualization or new things. Like your mind's just tuned in to do that, and a lot of those things happen. There's the science backing up that sort of theory is quite fascinating as well.
Amazing. So what does the future hold for Duncan? What have you got in the pipe? Well, what can you say? I'm sure there's some stuff that's under wraps.
One thing I've been very, very aware of, like spending time with people like Wally or Speed Project or anything like that, is like what I'm trying to consciously do now all the time is like, how can I put myself in the same like proximity to people that think like this, that are incredibly successful or have overcome certain you know, huge difficulties in their life. There's such an amazing, it's almost even from an epigenetics perspective, like you're in that environment with these sort of people. So I'm very much, I haven't done this as much in the last few years because you weren't really, like, you just couldn't. But like, what like conferences can I go to that have nothing to do with my industry, but there's some sort of developmental kind of perspective or things, new perspectives that I can kind of, and that always feeds back into your creativity as well. So that's a really, really big thing, just to spend more time with people that I feel that can kind of just really add a lot to me as a human being and as a creative. So it feeds into the work, it feeds into like how I approach things. But there is that kind of, you know, the old adage of like, you know, you're the average of the five people you spend the most kind of time with. And there's the more I sort of start to understand about actually like how that sort of works and how important that is, and how much like, how, wow, I just feel like I can, you know, take on anything when you spend time with people like Wally, or you're listening to this speaker that really resonates with you, or you're clicking, you know, you're reading this book, or, you know, time in nature and meditating. I think like all these things that I know that really, really work and add. I just feel like my kind of overall sort of thing is like, okay, well, how can my work like have the biggest impact? How can, as a creative, how can I sort of, so if you understand the power of creating visuals, or even, I think another big thing maybe going forward with me that I'm developing things, so I won't sort of say about it, but it is like, how can other people, like, how can I accelerate their growth like by telling my sort of story, which is why when I found out about the opportunity today, I was like 1,000% in, absolutely. Just because maybe someone just picks up. I know that I have personally like just picked up on a little. There's things in my head that ping around all the time that if I actually got them out there, so it might like someone might save those 3 months of not making that mistake, or like, oh, okay, it's okay to feel those doubts. Just you know, oh, it's yeah. okay to feel this way or have this struggle or be inspired by that. And there's so many like, there's no point in me achieving anything I achieve if I can't pass that on, if I can't open up doors for, you know, new waves of creatives coming through, if I can't like be the example to my son that he just sees, you know, or anyone else coming through, or in any way, or just being around someone or having that energy or that personality. If I can't, like, it's almost like I was talking to someone end of last year, and we're doing a bunch of shoots sort of coming up, but I just dismissed a lot of the stuff we've spoken about today, and I was like, oh yeah, well, you know, I've done this, you know, you've worked with so and so, and I'm like, okay, so what? And they're like, no, like, because this guy he's got an amazingly inventive company around sort of education. He's got these big sort of schemes going through for like teenagers in sort of tech world and entrepreneurship world. It's incredible. And he was like, these people would be falling over themselves to hear some of your stories. And I'm like, it doesn't, like, I've just kind of, I've lost the perspective of taking my lessons or some of the things that I've done, and actually how if I just got them out there a little bit more, it could maybe help someone speed up their own journey. And I think that's a real big driver for me. It's like working out, okay, well, how do I, not just what I create, but like, how do I then pass on those experiences in new ways and more sort of expansive ways, and do you know what, even like today's been like just complete fun, and I wasn't in any way really nervous about the experience, but like a couple of years ago, like being on camera would have petrified me, but I put myself through it, and now it's just a breeze. And I'm now curious, like, oh wow, like what else have I always been scared of that actually I might actually really enjoy once I've done it a couple of times? Like, I'm really, really, I will definitely be searching out more opportunities to sort of speak in public and get up on stage in front of the biggest audiences I can. And I'm in no way, you know, I'm probably technically terrible at it in many ways, but I know, having done what I've done, that I can ramp up the skills. And I had to, I had a speech to give sort of in the autumn of last year. It was quite a high pressure one. It was just like, afterwards, I got the same rush as I did from a creative perspective. And now the curiosity for me is like, oh wow, what else have I maybe dismissed that, because I was scared, like, fuck it, just like, maybe I hate it, but like, just go through it and do that. So I'm also, in terms of the future of me, like, we could sit down in a couple of years' time and I might, you know, have a few other sort of strings to the bow, but it's all part of my journey and sort of sharing that and evolving really as a creator, as a human being. But I definitely feel the speaking, the audio side of things might be something that I can add some value with.
I can't bloody wait to see the evolution of Duncan Nichols. We'll see you back here in 2025, mate. Please check out the links in the description to Duncan's incredible work. And while you're at it, why not take a leaf out of his book and go and pursue the things you love? Until next time.